Welcome to Mrugashira, a podcast that communicates with communicators. It's brought to you in association with DigiTales. I'm Radha Krishnan. Let's begin.
Our guest today is Lakshmipati Bhatt, an advertising veteran who has worked with agencies like Grey and FCB in the past. He is now Senior Vice President Marketing and Communications at RoboSoft Technologies. Lakshmi has rich experience in both advertising and B2B communications. We speak to him on trends and challenges in these sectors. Good morning, Lakshmi. Welcome to Mrugashira.
Morning. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You have been, in advertising and communication industry for a sufficiently long period of time, and you've been a veteran. I just wanted to understand, what are some of the trends that you have been seeing in advertising, specifically post-pandemic?
Before I address the post-pandemic bit, I would go back vastly in time, I would say, not just slightly in time, since I've been working from the early 90s, and what I have seen from then to now is that among the major trends, I can sense disintegration of services or unbundling of services as the biggest catalyst for change in the overall marketing communication industry. What I mean by that is, earlier in advertising, when things were not so complex when it came to media clutter or technology or proliferation of various platforms and so on, the ad agency was the single point of contact for any kind of marketing communication for an enterprise. And that included media planning and buying. As an AE, I would have to have some basic knowledge of media planning and buying in order to interact with my client and, you know, go back and interact with the media folks and so on. Similarly with other specialist departments, all of which were within the agency.
Yeah.
Sometime in mid-90s, I think, probably because multinationals like Procter & Gamble began to take India very seriously and multinational agencies began to take India very seriously, they brought in this change, or they forced agencies to change by splitting the media planning and buying in a service into a separate entity altogether. And remuneration also changed from a commission-based system or media commission-based system to a fee-based system.
Yeah.
So all of this, I think, gave impetus to the agencies, kind of stepping on each other's toes to set up specialist divisions, and divisions literally and figuratively, because it literally set up divisions between the creative agency and other specialist functions. So you had a media agency, you had a PR department, then you had a digital marketing division, then you had some agencies setting up shopper marketing. You name it, okay, and events and exhibitions were also, your specialist unit set up by agencies. So, so over the years, it has resulted in the agency focusing only on creative, whereas there are specialist units in PR, in media planning and buying, and later in digital and so on. So that has been, I think, the biggest change that is led to where we are today as an industry, where there are so many specialist divisions now, and not many of all working on the same brand, but not necessarily speaking with each other. The other day, Rory Sutherland, who's Ogilvy Consulting, I think chairman or co-chairman in UK, I forget, and he made a very interesting analogy. He spoke about how in today's marketing communication world, it's like giving a Sudoku puzzle and splitting up, each unit into separate, things to solve. Whereas you've solved your bit, but you've not put together the entire puzzle in place, right? So that is what is happening today, where digital advertising agencies or digital agencies, are focusing on largely social media creatives and maybe web-only videos, like long-form YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
And there is PR agency which is probably working on media relations, analyst relations, and digital PR. Then there is the advertising agency which is working on television commercials mostly because print is largely dead.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been, I think, the most significant change in the marketing industry. And the ad agency, which was orchestrating all of it earlier, has now passed on those reins to the brand manager, you know, because he or she has got a much better perspective of how and where the marketing money is spent, whether it is on digital media or film production or PR or, you know, influencer marketing or whatever else. So I think that has been one of the biggest changes. Specifically post-pandemic, I would say that, certain industries, certain categories obviously have seen a need for, uptake by the customers, whether it is anything to do with health related categories.
Mm-hmm.
So one is seeing a lot more action in terms of brands getting into that space. Whether it is there is a some sort of a relevance or what shall I say, link to the original brand.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a hardcore beauty brand, which is focused on being delivering beauty or fashion or lifestyle as a benefit, will move into hand sanitizer because there is a market over there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there is a lot of opportunities versus opportunistic approaches that are there. So those would be some of the changes that I have seen. And obviously post COVID, the whole work from home scenarios has resulted in both for positives and negatives as far as the communication industry is concerned, because we are in the communication industry, but we don't communicate well enough amongst each other.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of scope for things to slip between the cracks, and in large teams, which there is some merit in face to face meetings, physical interactions. There is one does see a lot of reluctance from people to get back to that typical 9-to-5 scenario at an office. Most are preferring hybrid work mode. So even in my team, while it's a very small team, I see that, and all of them are, and they're spread all over India. And while we do have a weekly meeting on video calls and so on,
mm-hmm.
It is not the same thing as meeting in person, brainstorming, just chatting, and so many other possibilities exist when we meet face to face, especially in the creative industry, the ideation industry. So I think those would be some of the changes that I would observe. Over the years. There are others. If you have time, we can speak about them.
B2B advertising and communication, most of the times, at least in the past, people used to think that if you bring out certain collaterals and if you send out certain mails to customers, then B2B communication is done. What is the kind of travel B2B communication has done, and has it really gained importance that it deserves today?
When I began in advertising, we had this term of corporate advertising where the corporate brand used to get advertised, and they used to take up the traditional media. I mean, we used to have print campaigns running for, I remember working on a company called Grindwell Norton, which used to make grinding lanes for industries, and then there were other companies which were into ball bearings, and they used to run corporate campaigns. Ambuja Cement used to run a very popular corporate campaign during launch of their annual reports or their work in CSR and so on. So we used to have corporate advertising. So but that was more in the context of a big brand wanting to project a certain position or image of it itself to the general public. Globally, I think some of the best examples of that would be IBM and GE. Both of them had very visible corporate campaigns which used to run on television, used to run on traditional billboards and so on. Even brands like Accenture, if you remember, have done that. Accenture even tied up with the likes of Tiger Woods with their campaign. So that was the genesis of corporate advertising. It was not strictly B2B in the sense that it was not under the radar. It was visible for everyone to see. So even if I am not going to be ever a customer of Accenture, I would see the ad, you know. But then, it probably a potential employee, it would make me feel good to see the ad of IBM or GE or Accenture. So it worked that way. So it was a more of a talent, attraction kind of a intent. I think post digital, after blogs took off. If I remember correctly, your B2B tech services brands like Wipro and the others, Infosys of the world, took to corporate blogs. There was a whole era where blog used to be written on the Infosys portal or a Wipro portal, and they would be seen and commented by their potential customers or prospects. And that was the intent. Talking to potential customers. Compared to the earlier corporate campaigns, it was more under the radar. So that was been the the roadmap of B2B. Today, I think there is a whole host of dependency on content marketing, as you know, for B2B. Enterprises believe that because their portal is the main port of call. For prospects to come in, learn more about them and their services and their within quotes thought leadership capabilities or wanting to establish voice of authority. So therefore, a lot has been done to build the credentials of a corporate brand through opinion pieces or articles in on particular trends and in a particular domain, case studies and so on. I also see that large enterprises like Wipro have focus on promoting senior management, the CEO's office, the kind of people they hire, ex-journalists who are trained to create media. Narratives or stories or of a particular cause or a brand. So they have come into play. So B2B communication has clearly seen a huge change from trying to be like typical consumer based big splash advertising. Well, so some brands still do that. They see a need for it. If you remember, TCS ran a global campaign sometime back, focus on certainty, yeah. Right? But there is a lot more focus now on content marketing, that is to create value-added content, whether it is a thought leadership, how-to guides or videos or articles, which go on to establish the voice of authority credentials of a brand. So that I would say is the focus or the shift from what corporate advertising was earlier, to what it is now. In fact, in the 1970s, I think, if I remember correctly, there was an ad from McGraw-Hill Publications in the US. It's an iconic ad. It showed a print ad. It showed a very stern-looking, it could be a CEO because he looks very senior, suit and booted. He's sitting in a chair and he's giving a tough look, and headline, the copy of the ad said something to the effect of, I don't know you, I don't know who you are, I don't know your company, I don't know what your product is, I don't know what you sell, I don't know about your reputation. Now, what is it that you wanted to sell me? And then the ad said, business reputation builds with corporate advertising or something like that. So we are in that situation now with digital platforms. You're building a reputation for a brand, for prospective customers as well as prospective employees through content marketing and distribution.
how important is omnichannel marketing?
Well, see, omnichannel, I mean, I really don't know if you find that term, but it's a fantastic term, which is, you know, stuck in our minds for decades now. As I understand it, it is about maximizing the potential of every platform. And if you look at advertising in its truest sense, you know, it has been practiced right from, you know, the time before digital was even a thing. A well-known radio, I mean a well-produced radio spot would use the audio impact of the medium very well. A well-produced outdoor ad would use the characteristics of an outdoor medium, that is a fleeting medium, making an impact quickly, visually arresting, so on and so forth. They will do that well. So it is about making use of that platform's strengths and strengths to your advantage. That was omnichannel. Okay, and while it is good and a very important piece of your marketing mix, somehow I feel that a lot of brands tend to take a tick box approach, in the sense that because there is Instagram available, they open an account on Instagram and have some posts out there without really evaluating perhaps whether it is required, whether the audience that you are primarily seeking, they may be on Instagram, yes, but they may be on Instagram for different reasons. For example, I may be a potential customer for an analytics company. I am also on Instagram, but I'm on Instagram to look at some interesting reels or look at some interesting images and so on. I don't know whether any analytics firms Instagram post is going to really influence me. Whereas it may do so on LinkedIn, right? So what I see is that even something like a brand that is into optic fiber and enabling internet communications is on Instagram, and they put out stuff, or they mandate their agencies to put out stuff on World Internet Day or World Social Media Day or something like that. And if you see the post, there are 20 likes, 30 likes, mostly employees, I'm sure. They are no way going to be clutter breaking in the milieu of Instagram, where there are so many people doing eye-popping work, and they are regular folks who are producing reels and putting out images and so on. So you are going to compete in that environment. So are you going to really stand out in that clutter? So in the quest for being omnichannel, some brands I think are taking a tick box approach by simply being present in every platform, whether it is relevant or not.
That tick box approach also means that sometimes you just get into adaptation and the same thing sort of appears in the same format, probably in multiple platforms.
And also there is this whole obsession with moment marketing, even for B2B brands, where they just because there is Mother's Day or World Cupcake Day or something like that, they have to produce an ad or social media creative, So I don't see the reason. I mean, I don't see any relevance or business benefit to the brand, but they seem to have that fear of missing out.
How much of tech is relevant or important in B2B marketing and communication?
I mean, I feel even in B2C, technology or, the MarTech function is taken on huge importance, because everybody is trying to prove some sort of ROI, and that's also a function of the marketing function overall is not getting the CXO or the C-suite level, attention. And we need to go and tell the bosses that, look, what I have done is work. And by work, they may go and give some vanity metrics. What I put out got 500 likes, or it got 3 million impressions and stuff like that. By itself, they don't mean nothing, right? And as somebody said, not everything that is measurable is worth measuring. So you have vanity metrics, and you know, so that attitude comes through even in B2B, where MarTech is important. I'm not dismissing the benefits of marketing, but more than what end are you going to use technology is going to be important. Measuring meaningful metrics is important, and somewhere down the line, an acceptance that at the end of the day, human intuition cannot be replaced. I mean, there is that you know, creative idea or you know, an aesthetic presentation of a particular you know, piece of data, a well-written article that tells a good story, projecting an image of you know, a CEO that is very empathetic. Those are intangibles, and you know, and there is room for that, and we must accept that technology is important, but it's not the you know, be all end all of marketing communication. Ages ago, I think it was Bill Birnbach who said it's about persuasion, and persuasion is an art, not a science. Right? We are all here to persuade somebody to take action, change their mind, you know, buy something, choose us, etc. And at the end of the day, and as our quote said, it is an art, and everything cannot be reduced to numbers and metrics.
How do you see the roadmap for the next, let's say, 5 to 8 years?
It's difficult to predict what's going to happen next year, so I don't know whether I should even venture into next 5 to 8 years. But what I see, you know, in B2B communication is that there is a lot of white noise. What I mean by that is whether it is a technology service provider or a industrial you know, manufacturer or any other service or you know, which is in B2B sector. As I mentioned earlier, there is a whole host of there is this tendency to produce content, and in that quest, I think there is a lot of content that is being produced which is just out there doing nothing. You know, there are these 600 word articles or blogs which will have a very lofty headline like 5 trends in artificial intelligence that you must know about, and then when you read it, somehow you get the feeling that you're not really being enriched by reading that. I don't know whether you get that feeling. I get that feeling very often,
and absolutely,
it cuts across industry. Okay, and then I think it is self you know, it is going to be self defeating, because you are not giving the chance of that one good article or one good piece of content to shine through, because you are creating that a sense of boredom or sense of tiring feeling among the audience who are going to be bombarded with such, who are going to ignore anything that is going to be remotely in the space of voice of authority, thought leadership, and selling, if they are going to be you know, fed continuously with below par or suboptimal work. Okay, and yes, there is a hunger for to know more. You know, people do read, or people do download a lot of e-books which is to do with trends and opportunities and stuff like that. But how much of them is actually adding value? So my you know, contention is that the premium is going to be placed on subject matter experts who can be articulate, who can convey an idea or meaningful value addition on a particular subject, and not all of them will be articulate. So therefore, the generalists who were in vogue earlier, who could understand, who were not probably technology tech people themselves, or domain industry experts themselves, but who had the knack of understanding what a particular industry trends was, or you know, figuring out the consumer pulse and then articulating that well, or being the catalyst to get someone to articulate it well. I think that talent is going to be back in vogue, where people who can who are generalists, who are good at understanding the business trends, understanding the technology trends, but they may not be domain experts or tech experts themselves, and who can extract the best out of subject matter experts, as well as people who can articulate, people who are creative, and put out content that is truly adding value. I think that talent is going to be of premium in the years to come. Yes, my view, I mean, I could be wrong, because I keep reading that there is specialist in metaverse, specialist in AI, specialist in blockchain is the future, etc. But I think beyond all that, there is somebody who can orchestrate all of it and tell a potential customer or a talent what all this means to you. And I think that is where the missing piece is currently.
Thanks, Lakshmi, for your time.
Thank you.
Really
my pleasure.
This conversation. Thank you.
Ditto. Thank you so much. Take care. Thank you. Bye.
Hope you enjoy listening to Mrugashira, a podcast for communication folks. Do share your suggestions and feedback on mrugashira@digitales.co.in. I repeat, mrugashira@digitales.co.in. Have a great week ahead, and do not forget to tune in next week.